We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, season's greetings to you again, you and yours, on this day in which you only have 6 days left to shop and prepare for Christmas. I am Jim Behnke, and this is the December 19th, 2009 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, former astronaut Winston Scott, a good friend and no stranger to the Space Coast, will be joining us on the program shortly. And I hope you will, too, as you are invited, as always, to join in the conversation by calling 768-1240, star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast. And if you're out of town or need to dial long distance, the number 321-768-1240. And, of course, we'll take your questions at via email at spacetalking@aol.com. You may be listening to us live online at WMMBAM.com, and certainly you can just send in your questions or comments via AOL. Well, look, I guess if you've been following the space program even a little closely for the past few weeks and few months, you certainly know that NASA's future exploration plans are somewhat at a crossroads right now. There are several paths of where we might go from here, and we still need to know with what hardware and to what destination. All of that's been debated, discussed, argued, and ultimately, finally, in a report to the president here, it's all on his table right now. It's going to be up to him to choose the path that NASA takes next, and then I guess it'll be up to Congress to agree or disagree and provide the needed money. This past week, it was the big news. NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden, who I personally have a lot of faith and confidence in, met with President Obama in the Oval Office to talk about NASA's future. And although nothing officially was announced following that meeting, if you believe some of the leaks and reports that followed, NASA may be getting an extra $1 billion, that's B, billion dollars, in 2011. And with that money would come a plan that would cancel the Ares 1 and Ares 5 launch vehicles, probably target asteroids or other near-Earth places as the next destination for us to explore. And we would get there using some kind of a new heavy lifting rocket that might be a scaled down version of what had been proposed for Ares 5. It could be a new shuttle derived vehicle, perhaps with a side mounted cargo carrier like the old Shuttle C we used to talk about way back when. Could be a beefed up Delta 4 or Atlas 5. Could be something else we don't even know about yet. But in any case, those ideas are out there and have been kind of leaked. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. I guess astronauts and cargo destined for the International Space Station would rely initially on other nations that we've talked about and eventually commercial launch providers if they can get up and running and prove that they can do the job. Now, while that certainly isn't the ideal path that perhaps I would choose, either for the nation or for Florida in particular, I would not say that the news this week was enough to wreck the holidays. I would say that those details, even if only partially true, I think are still better news than the worst-case alternatives that we could have, in which other case would be no money, no exploration, shut it all down and pack it up and go home. We do still have to wait for the official word, and again, your guess is as good as mine as to when that's going to happen. Next week, the week after that, perhaps during the State of the Union, and the end of January now is when that speech will be, perhaps in early February when the next federal budget comes out. So we'll wait. We'll keep our fingers crossed. In the meantime, also this week, a little news out of Washington, which raised my blood pressure for a little bit. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, a California Democrat. I mean, California, that's one of your top aerospace states. She's been asked to talk. She was asked in just a conversation, talked about the space program following the meeting with Bolden and the president. And she said, and I quote, "If you are asking me personally, I have not been a big fan of manned expeditions to outer space in terms of safety and cost. But people could make the case technology is always changing, and that could change depending on the technology. What is the mission, she asked? How will the money effectively be spent? In what period of time to create jobs? To compared to what? Everything is in competition for the dollar, and a judgment will be made as to what it does in terms of job creation, she said. I say unbelievable. And then there are a lot of other words I could say that will be recorded, and I wouldn't want it to get to her or for my children to hear me say them. But I just unbelievable that she would say those things and have those comments. Now, interesting, and to her credit, within a day, Congresswoman Susan Cosmos, the Florida Democrat, mostly Volusia County, but she does represent the Kennedy Space Center area, the northern area of Brevard, responded, put out a press release, which I think is just absolutely was absolutely great. And let me just read a couple of things of what she said, some of what she said in this release. She says, in response to the comments, she sent a letter outlining the benefits of human spaceflight. And she said, quote, while we await the administration's vision and recommendations for the future of the program, I believe I have an obligation to reiterate to the speaker the numerous benefits that space exploration provides. Our human spaceflight program boosts our economy, helps develop countless new technologies, and supports thousands of jobs in Central Florida and across the country. Space exploration is also critical for inspiring this and future generations to excel in science and technology for the 21st century. I will continue fighting at every turn to ensure a robust human spaceflight program. She says to the speaker, I urge you to keep in mind both the tangible and intangible benefits provided by investing in NASA and our nation's human spaceflight program. There is no question that increased funding for NASA, as recommended by the review of the U.S. Human Spaceflight Plans Committee, will help to create and retain highly skilled, high-paying jobs across the country, including up to 7,000 direct jobs currently at risk in Florida. Well done, Susan Cosmos, Congresswoman Cosmos. Great response from her, a member of Pelosi's own party. You know, we talked a couple weeks ago about how you can get people to support this space program, and that's to get them down here to watch a launch. And I think a full court press ought to be done by anyone who's out there in the position to do so, to get Speaker Pelosi down here for a shuttle launch as rapidly as possible. It's that would be about the best thing that could happen to get her support for the space program. And I hope she picks up on this really quick and learns her lesson. And by the way, it's not too late for you also to send a message to the president, encourage his support for the space program. Go to the Space Talk webpage that we have at WMMBAM.com. Just use the keyword Space Talk. Scroll down, and you'll find a link to a website that will help you do that. This is the U.S. space site that the Brevard County Commission put together. Gives you all the help and directions for putting together a letter of some kind, an email or a direct letter or whatever, to the president, showing your support for the space program. Other companies, other folks are doing the same kind of thing. Boeing recently put out a word to all its employees, giving them instructions to do something very similar on a very similar website. People are making those letters. They are writing the letters. They are doing what they need to do to get the word out. We heard from Space Florida President Frank DiBello that he had word from the White House that they had reached nearly a 500,000 letters delivered to Washington. And that the impact is being made. So all that's a good thing, and we encourage you all to continue to do that. If you haven't sent your Christmas cards out yet, you know, send one to the president and include some words about the space program. So, well, look, when we return, we're going to continue to talk about human space flight. We'll talk about space education, the future of space exploration, and we'll do that with a man who has spent more than 24 days in Earth orbit. Winston Scott joins us momentarily here on Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Remember, you can join us, 321-768-1240, or send us an email at spacetalking@aol.com. So now please stay tuned for more Space Talk, again brought to you by United Space Alliance. We'll be right back.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Not sure if that Jim Benke's in space goes with chestnuts roasting on an open fire. That's good stuff. 321-768-1240. The number to call us in the studio right now as we again say happy holidays and welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Well, I'm so pleased to have here in the studio with me today a good friend with whom I have shared an adventure or two during the past few years. Winston Scott is one of those rare breeds, an actual Florida native right here in the studio, who was born and raised in the Miami area. He, among many other things, a retired Navy captain, a former NASA astronaut with two shuttle mission patches sewn to his flight jacket, and now the Dean of Aeronautics, if I've got the title correct, at Florida Tech right here in Melbourne. Winston, welcome back. Welcome back to Space Coast. I guess you've been here for a while since you moved back from Houston.
Absolutely, Jim, and thank you very much. It's great being back home, back to the state of Florida. It's good seeing you again.
Yeah,
and
it's been a while.
I'm enjoying being down there at Florida Tech. Absolutely.
Good. I should also mention that you're also an author of the book Reflections from Earth Orbit.
Yes.
Published by our friends at Apogee Books, and Rick Connor up there will be now happy that I said that.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Right. Well, I want to start and talk a little bit about your background. Of course, you know, everyone's got a neat story, and your story about how you went from Miami to space and what you did along the way, especially when you read your bio and you see that, Winston, you've got a Bachelor of Arts in Music, and then you went into the Navy and did aeronautical engineering. Now, how did you make that jump?
You know, people ask me that all the time, and it's not as mysterious as it sounds. I was actually a kid who was interested in music, but also in technology. And, you know, the two go together. That's not all that unusual. When I went to college, I studied music and engineering, believe it. I was doing a double major up at FSU. FSU closed the engineering school.
Wow.
That's right. So I had to finish my degree in music. Then the Navy later on sent me back to school, finished my undergraduate in engineering, then my master's in engineering. So it's not quite as dramatic as it may sound.
Well, and then FSU would close the engineering department would be a subject for a discussion later in the hour, perhaps, you know, as to what we need to be doing in the state. Now, my oldest son, Christopher, a junior in college at Palm Beach Atlantic with a music major.
Yes.
Do I need to have any fear that he's going to drop his career and go become an astronaut?
Well, I don't know. You might need to talk to him
about
it. If the bug bites, look
out. Keep the two of you away. Well, that's good. So you know, you went in the Navy, you went aeronautical engineering, you became a naval aviator.
Naval aviator, that's right.
And then when did the space bug bite you?
Well, I flew airplanes for the Navy, of course, and flew operationally for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I was always interested in the engineering end of flying, so I was fortunate enough to be selected as what the Navy calls an aerospace engineering duty officer. So I got into research and development, test flying, new aircraft systems. And then the next step up for a person doing what I was doing naturally would be to apply for the space program.
Okay.
So about my 18th year in the Navy, and that's not all that unusual,
right,
to apply 18 years, I was fortunate enough to be selected by NASA and spent the next 9 years or so at Johnson Space Center as an active astronaut.
Mm-hmm. So was it the engineering background? I mean, because you went in as basically as a mission specialist.
That's right.
As opposed to a pilot.
Right.
Pilot command track.
Right.
So was it the aeronautical engineering that gave you that science that you went that way rather than your flight experience?
No, I think it was more what NASA needed. I applied for both positions and was selected as mission specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And now my specialty is, you know, was EVA.
Okay.
So my flight background allowed me to be the flight engineer for the flight. So I was MS-2. So I actually worked with the pilot and the commander and operated the vehicle. I actually got to pilot the vehicle.
Did also, you really?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. On orbit?
On orbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I've actually not absolutely. Can't reach from MS-2
while
you're in the cockpit. But
well, not during the
launch
during
and landing.
The launch and landing,
right.
But during the orbit.
So doing a little roundabout ops.
So anyway, my operational background allowed me to function as an EVA crew member. So, you know, it depends on what NASA needs at the time.
Well, now, and let's talk a little bit about your flights. STS-72, Endeavor, January of 96.
Right. 9 days.
9 days. You did spacewalks for ISS assembly, International Space Station assembly,
practicing. We were testing the tools, equipment, techniques that they're using right now to finish assembly of ISS.
And
absolutely.
And did they wind up using them? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the things that I tested during my first spacewalk was improvements to the suit. If you remember, at about that time, the Russians were broadcasting as major partners. We changed the location of the station.
Right.
It went from 28.5, from inclination 28.5 to 51.6.
Right.
It's colder at 51.6.
Okay.
NASA redesigned the spacesuit. The crew before me tested it. Didn't work very well. They were too cold, had to come back in.
Mm-hmm.
NASA made modifications. I tested the modifications to the suit to help keep astronauts warm.
Warmer.
Well, there were heated gloves, okay, thermal socks, and what we call LCVG bypass.
Okay.
The liquid cooling and ventilation garment.
Right.
It keeps astronauts cool.
That's the underwear with the tubes with the water going through it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Back up just a little bit, because the audience probably thinks the problem in space is keeping astronauts warm.
Right.
A bigger problem in space is keeping astronauts cool.
Right.
You can easily overheat.
Right.
So the suit has a cooling system. NASA modified the suit, modified that cooling system to help the suit function in colder temperatures.
Right.
And I tested those modifications.
Okay.
And those are the suits the guys are wearing right now when they do EVAs.
Yeah, the neat thing about heat in space, I don't know if it's neat, but the thing about heat in space is it doesn't go anywhere.
Well,
it just kind of just covers right next to you,
absolutely.
And you can and you warm up.
Especially inside of the suit. The
right.
suit is so very well insulated. We could talk all day long about
right,
that suit.
Right, right, right.
It's so very well insulated. You could easily overheat your
How are your fingers after?
Well, again, oh, man. My longest spacewalk was on my second mission, 7 hours and 53 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah.
And if you conduct a 8-hour spacewalk, you're inside the suit between 10 and 11 hours.
Right.
I tell you, your hands are like putty. After you've worked inside of those stiff, pressurized gloves for 10 hours or 11 hours, your
just
fingers
nasty.
Are like putty. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's go back to your first EVA and that first step out of the airlock.
Yes.
I mean, that is supposed to be the ultimate astronaut experience.
It is, although the ultimate experience comes a couple of minutes after you go out, because when you come out of the airlock, as you know, you're down low in the payload bay. So you can't see much of space.
Right.
You got to float yourself up to the top of the shuttle and peer over the edge.
And when you do that,
man, goodness gracious, look out. Because now you see the Earth beneath you. You're away from it. And you see the paper-thin horizon. You see the continents going by below you, and it's just absolutely incredible.
And those are good words. And at the same time, if you start really thinking about it, I guess words fail most guys.
There are no words to adequately describe what you see and feel.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Just amazing. Well, and on the second flight, a little time here, on the second flight, STS-87, Columbia, November, December, 97.
Right.
Another one of these kind of impromptu EVAs.
Yes.
And kind of exciting stuff that that you had to go out and do and grab a spacecraft.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
The Spartan satellite. We have a Spartan 206, which is a solar observation satellite. This thing weighs 2,950 pounds. I always say 3,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the same mass as a car.
Right.
A small car. And the satellite malfunctioned. And during the attempted retrieval, it inadvertently entered a spin. So we had a 3,000-pound satellite in a very, very slow spin. Because it was spinning, we couldn't recapture it with the shuttle's robot arm.
Right.
Therefore, my partner Takao Doi, you know, Japanese astronaut,
right.
Takao and I went outside and we had to manually catch that satellite. And that was not something we had planned to do. The satellite had sharp edges. You had to be careful where you touch it. Takao was on his first flight.
Right.
English was his second language.
Oh, good. Now? No, now. Left? No, correct. Right? No?
Well, I actually had to rehearse with him the terminology that I was going to use so as not to confuse
him. Because
his English is excellent, of course. But
so it was a matter of, you know, now we all remember, I don't say we all remember, but I certainly remember STS-49,
right.
Which was the Inelsat rescue, which
right.
was this. If any of you have seen this picture of three spacewalkers reaching up to grab this satellite, that's the mission we're talking about. It's the only time that there's ever been three spacewalkers outside a shuttle like that. And, of course, with the two of you, you have to get to the right kind of both in the right position,
yes.
grab corners, grab
yes.
sides.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah, and what I had to do from my position, I had to give our commander, Kevin Kriegel was the commander, was flying
Kevin's
the vehicle.
Kevin's a good guy, yeah.
Yeah, Kevin's a good guy, great pilot. I'd give Kevin position calls so that he could place us in a position so that we could grab the satellite, and we grabbed whatever we could get hold of, first of all, then transferred our grip to a more of a secure area where we could manipulate the satellite, because it's more than just grabbing it. We had to actually rotate it to an orientation that would allow us to fasten into the bay. It would only go in one way.
Right.
So we had to rotate this big thing around.
So you grab it, you rotate it, you're kind of manhandling, and then Caplano used the robot arm to...
Yes, we tried to latch it down by hand. It couldn't get it to latch.
Okay.
So finally, we used the Culpina and Steve Lindsay used the robot arm to hold it in place so that we could latch it into the bay.
Okay. Wow.
It took 3.5 hours to do that.
And then on top of that, you had regular spacewalk.
We had regular spacewalk to do.
So that's where you start getting your fingers all nasty. And
it was a long spacewalk. I think at that time it was one of the longest of the program. I wish that record's been broken now. But we were close to 8 hours. I had a 30-minute warning light on my suit.
Oh, really?
Come on. Yeah, telling me that you got 30 minutes. You need to get back inside when we finish that EVA.
And that's where you just want to just jump and go as fast as you can, right? I mean, 30 minutes go up pretty quick, right?
Goes pretty quick. But, of course, you don't want to do that. You take it nice and slow, methodically clean everything up, and then get back inside.
Well, speak of things going fast, we're already done with the first segment, Winston. We're going to take a stop right here. This is our standard 5-minute built-in hold at the bottom of the hour. When we return, we'll have more with Winston Scott right here on Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance, innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
This is Space Talk with Jim Banky.
So sweet. That's Christmas music. Winston, you ever play that music?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I love all kinds of music, especially Christmas music.
A little good stuff, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
Well, welcome back to the second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Reminding that you can give us a call at 321-768-1240 or *1240 for AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast. Again, spacetalking@AOL.com gets you email to us. And during the week, we invite you to follow us on Twitter at Space Talking, and also remind you that Space Talk can be heard live online right now at WMMBAM.com. And each week, a recording of today's show will be available as a podcast to download, also again at WMMBAM.com. Well, again, we're joined by Winston Scott, 2-time shuttle astronaut and all-around good guy, Florida native. And a music major who then went off to do aeronautical engineering and flew in space. So there's hope for all of us music lovers everywhere. Well, we were talking about your 2 space flights and your experiences in EVA. And, of course, I got to ask you the astronaut question. Mm-hmm. What's it really like?
I tell you what. I get that all the time, and I hesitate all the time because there are no words to adequately describe it. It's fun. Because you're floating around and fly all over the place like Superman, but it's challenging and difficult. You have to get used to being there. You know, our bodies were not meant to live in zero gravity.
Right.
And there's a big adjustment to go through so that you can function up there. And the timelines are tight. There's so much to do, but it's an incredible experience, unmatched by anything you can imagine here on Earth.
How long did it take you to readapt coming back after each mission?
Yeah, you know, it depends on how long you're up there. Now, my first flight, 9 days long, you can walk shortly after you get back, but it's an unsteady walk.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of days, you're walking fairly well, but you're sore because you haven't carried your body weight for a while.
Okay.
All of a sudden, you're carrying this 100-something pounds around.
Right.
And after a week or so, you feel normal, but you're not. You could very easily injure yourself if you went out and played basketball or racquetball or whatever. So if you've been in space for 9 days, it may take you 3 or 4 weeks to get back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been in space for 6 months, it may take you a couple of months with physical therapy to get back to perfectly normal.
Well, and I've heard from the longtime space flyers, and I know you weren't up there that long enough, but after you've spent 6 months, for example, you start dreaming in zero gravity. And I've heard stories of some of these guys have, you know, it's 3 weeks after their flight, and then they just they're writing, and then they just drop their pen.
Yes,
you know, because they expect it to float, and they just their mindset isn't quite. It's like, I guess, a foreign language. At some point, you start dreaming in that language. Well,
absolutely.
Well, let's talk about. So you've had all these experiences, and then you left the astronaut office, did a couple of different things. Right now, You are at Florida Tech, Florida Institute of Technology,
yes,
as the Dean of Aeronautics.
Yes.
So talk about what you're doing there, that program, and what that school is up to.
Well, of course, Florida Tech is doing real well. The school now is up to about 8,000 students total, about around 5,000 on campus, and another 3,000 at the satellite campuses and also through distance learning. The building is going on tremendously. We have a new aviation facility, the Emo Bueller Center for Aviation Training and Research. And we also have the new Scott Center for Autism that just opened up, the new Harris Research Engineering Building. And also the BISC building for a business is going to be started here just shortly. So the school is growing by leaps and bounds.
Wow.
And even in this economy, we're doing well. Now, my job as the Dean of the College of Aeronautics is to oversee aeronautics, which consists of the academic programs. And we have seven different majors at the bachelor's and master's level in the College of Aeronautics.
Okay.
Then I have the flight program where our students can learn to fly.
Right.
While they're receiving their bachelor's degrees, they can also learn to be pilots.
Right.
And we put students into all of the cockpits of the airlines, all of the major all the military services. We have students who are airport managers, who are airport planners, who are designers and layout, who are airport operations specialists, who are dispatchers, and you name it, we send students out into those professions.
And when talking about this, again, in the interest of full disclosure, I am an Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University graduate.
And I remembered that.
and if there's Army, Navy, and there's the Packers and the Vikings,
that's right.
there is
FSU, U of F.
Yeah, that's right. There is Embry-Riddle and there is Florida Tech.
Yes,
and while neither of us have football teams, we take great pride in our flight teams.
We sure
where
do.
A bunch of us geeky pilots get around and say, well, who can land on the right spot on the runway or maintain the right speed on approach or whatever the different things are. And as I was going to school back in the 80s, we regularly spanked Florida Tech flight team. Now, I wasn't on the flight team, but I had buddies that were.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that tradition continues today. How's the rivalry going?
Let's put it this way. We just had the state flying competition.
Right.
A couple of months ago. It was held in Jacksonville. 21 teams entered. Florida Tech finished 3 of 21. Embry-Riddle did finish number 1.
Oh, isn't that awful?
So the rivalry continues.
That's
I like to say that Embry-Riddle may be the big dog, but we're Avis.
Well, that's right. You try harder. But I think it's great that Florida Tech is growing. And, of course, Florida Tech come around direct result of the space program.
Absolutely.
You know, in its
Florida
origins.
Florida Tech app was founded because of the space program, for the engineers to
And are you finding people coming down because they want to be a part of the space program, they want to be part of the Space Coast?
That is an attraction, yes. People come to Florida Tech because they want to be a part of the space program and because of the Space Coast. The wonderful weather we have, you know, 360-plus flying days a year. And a lot of the students who come to us obviously come because they want to learn to fly. They want to be involved in aerospace in one way or another.
Okay. Well, and let's talk about, you know, that's good for the state.
Yes.
And let's talk about the state of Florida and the space program. And again, one of the hats you wore for a while was executive director, Florida Space Authority. Authority.
That's right.
And I was involved with you at that time, too. We worked together when I was at the Space Foundation. And when I was on the Governor's Commission for the Future of Space and Aeronautics in Florida, we looked at it and did a thing where we basically did away with your job.
Right. I didn't look at it quite that way.
Quite that way.
That's one
and
way to look
and
at.
Other organizations and ultimately formed Space Florida. And Space Florida with Frank DiBello now is as the president out there doing a good job in trying to preach the word for space.
Right.
I'm curious now as the outsider looking in. You know, are we headed in the right direction with our state space program? Is there more we could be doing? What should we be doing that would help bring more space stuff here to Florida?
Well, I'll answer your question as candidly, as diplomatically as I can. I think that perhaps the state got off track for the last couple of years, and I think we're on track now. I think Frank DiBello is the right person for the job. And of course, I knew Frank and worked real closely with Frank when I was director of the Space Authority, and Frank had the Aerospace Finance Corps, and Sam Durance, of course, had the Research Foundation. We three sort of worked together. So I think you got the right person in place there. I think Frank has the right idea. Frank is out trying to bring more space-related business into the state of Florida. But Frank can't do that alone. Frank is going to have the support from the highest levels of government in the state of Florida. Yeah. And if Frank does not get that support, then he's not going to be successful. So I think Frank has the right ideas, but he's got to have the support.
Well, and my concern, I'll just say it personally from my point of view, is that the lieutenant governor, the governor has got to be their support. And I think there's some support there, but I think the support from the entire Florida legislative world in the form of a budget,
absolutely,
together by our legislators and in the House and the Senate side, approved by and pushed by the governor's office. I don't know if that's happening yet to the point to where it's really going to help us make a true difference. And I think maybe we're still dealing with the fallout of the last couple of years, and we're just now in this first full budget cycle where Frank's at the helm. But I still remain concerned that the state is not doing all that it can do. And it's not just Frank's job to do it. It's everyone else's job.
Absolutely. I would agree with you. Of course, I've only been back in the state for a year. When I left the Space Authority, of course, I went back to Houston, Johnson Space Center, for a couple of years and been back for 1 year.
Yeah.
But I would agree I'm not sure the state is doing all it could do. I think we could be a bit more aggressive in going after the space business than we're being. And that means, of course, providing the proper funding necessary for Frank's organization to do its job.
Yeah, I think that the more of that support is coming. I still am concerned, and it's not a Space Florida issue. It's a state of Florida issue that, we need to think beyond launch.
Oh, absolutely.
In just Brevard County, that we need to think about all the other pieces of the space program where there's room to do all that in the rest of the state. Manufacturing,
right.
Assembly, operations,
right.
Tests, and in the university system.
Absolutely.
More. I mean, you talked earlier about FSU giving up its engineering program years ago, and I know that's all kind of back in different stages, but what more can the universities do, including Florida Tech, including Embry-Riddle, to bring more space activity here? Mm-hmm. When was the last time any university in our state put together a satellite that was launched? I don't know if we ever have, put an actual whole big spacecraft together. I think we've done experiments.
I don't know that we have either, which is a shame because quite a few other states have done that.
Yeah.
And we consider ourselves the leading state in space exploration. So I agree with you. More needs to be done.
And with a couple of minutes left before the next break, Winston, let's talk now nationally, too. And you know the story. We talked in the opening segment about where we might be going.
Right.
Any thoughts on where we should be heading, where we're not heading, where you'd like us to go? You've been up there.
I will say this. I think that we have a plan in place. Okay. I think if you continue to shift your goals and change goals, you never get any place.
Right.
We have a plan in place, and that was Moon, Mars, and Beyond. My personal feeling is that we ought to stick to that plan, but we need the funding to do it. It disturbs me greatly that we're going to shut down a shuttle program, for example, before we have the next vehicle come along.
Yeah.
And so that really bothers me, and I'm sure it bothers a lot of other people. I would like to see us provide the funding, and it would be a minuscule amount to keep the shuttles flying. You could fly two missions a year until we develop the new vehicle, the Orion, the Constellation program. And I'd like to see us stick with Moon, Mars, and Beyond. I know that there are people who are pushing for satellite exploration, and that's fine, but it represents a change. And I think I need to stop. Maybe I'll finish this thought later if we get a chance.
Yeah, no, that's good. So there are some new places we need to go, and the idea of extending the shuttle is certainly there. Let us continue doing that. We'll take our final break of the day now. I'll be back more with Winston Scott right here on Space Talk on WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
Jingle bell, jingle bell. So tempted to start singing there, and it's better not for the show's sake. Welcome back, everyone, to Space Talk in this holiday season. Space Talk sponsored to you by United Space Alliance, and we're here still with Winston Scott, former astronaut and now a dean of the College of Aeronautics at Florida Tech. And Winston, we're talking about the future of our space program you mentioned, and again, we're asking you this from the perspective of being an astronaut. The gap, the difference between the end of the shuttle program and whatever is next. That concerns you,
that
we have that gap.
Absolutely. I don't think I'm alone. I think most people here on the Space Coast share that concern. It is just unfathomable to me that we're going to shut down our only access to space and pay a foreign country to take us there.
Yeah.
While we delay development of our next vehicle.
And is that the issue more so than you're concerned about riding on another person's vehicle? I mean, the Soyuz is pretty proven.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This has my comments have nothing to do with the capability of the Russians. They have excellent capability, excellent equipment. The point is that we are the leading nation in aerospace and space exploration. If we're going to maintain that lead, then we ought to maintain our indigenous capability to get to space.
Right.
Otherwise, we're no longer leaders.
But then related to that, you have the commercial folks coming along, and you've got Elon Musk's SpaceX, you've got the Falcon
Absolutely.
9, you've
yes.
got the Dragon
yes.
vehicle.
Yes.
How many times does that have to fly, or what hoops does it have to go through, and who should be managing those hoops or regulating those hoops
I think that process is going along as well as can be expected. I think the government is exercising the right amount of regulation. They have significant hurdles to overcome from a technical standpoint before they can put people in orbit. And I'm all for these companies. Remember, I pushed for us to court those companies to come here, so I'm all for it. But I think it's going to be there's going to be a period of time here. It's not going to happen tomorrow before the commercial companies are ready to put people into space. I'm all for it, and I love to fly with one of those companies when they're up and running. But they got ways to go yet.
They do, and I'm anxious to the point where they decide, for example, is this an FAA regulatory issue? I mean, NASA's not a regulatory agency, but, you know, if NASA astronauts are going to fly on one of these things, you can be sure they're going to be involved.
Well, absolutely. I think NASA's astronauts flying on those vehicles is probably going to be short-lived until a new NASA vehicle comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to have the commercial vehicles manned by commercial men and women is what I think mm-hmm. is going to happen. I see it under the FAA's purview. And FAA is doing a magnificent job of regulating aircraft certification and aircraft safety.
Right.
And an extension of their role could be commercial spacecraft safety and commercial spacecraft certification.
Yeah. And you mentioned a little bit ago about continuing to fly shuttle. Now, you know, there is this issue of, for example, the last external tank has been built.
Yes.
So, you know, we've got five more flights. I think there's a sixth contingency
yes.
set of hardware out
yes.
there.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you couldn't say right now fly six more missions, but two a year.
Absolutely.
Or one a year, or
Absolutely.
Whatever it would take.
Absolutely. I mean, the reason why the last external tank has been built is because we didn't make the decision a year ago or 2 years ago to keep flying. But if we said right now, let's keep flying shuttle,
yeah.
a couple of missions a year, and there's no reason why we could not accomplish that and do it safely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what about this next vehicle? We talked a little bit about whether Ares 1 or Ares 5.
Right.
A lighter version of Ares 5,
right.
you know, the shuttle and, you know, and I'm not really sure where I want to go with all this, but, you know, I'm thinking shuttle, I'm thinking safety.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm thinking, okay, well, if it's an unmanned vehicle,
mm-hmm.
there's really nothing wrong with the shuttle
mm-hmm.
other than that they put the orbiter next to the foam,
right.
next to the tank.
Right.
You know, and if you take the people out of it, then who cares, right?
Well, that's true.
Is that essentially it? You know, keep flying the shuttle, but don't put people on it?
No. I think that we ought to keep flying the shuttle, we ought to keep putting people on it. The shuttle can be flown safely. I mean, we've had two accidents, that's true, but there's no such thing as a 100% safe program.
Right, right.
That's what we have to realize. I think the shuttle can be flown safely for another few years until we develop a new vehicle. It's more important to me that we manage the risk and fly shuttle than to shut the whole program down and depend on somebody else
yeah.
until we bring a new vehicle online. And let's face it, the vehicle is not going to come online. The new vehicle will not come online at the time we're predicting.
Right.
They are always delayed.
It's always a delay.
Absolutely.
Yep. And that just seems to be the way it is.
Absolutely.
And we have to figure out the best way to live with it.
Yes.
Well, Winston, thank you. We're going to run out of time with you, but thanks for coming by.
Hey, it's my
and
pleasure.
Saying hello and talking with us, and you're back in the community. We're going to come back to you, rely on you, see what more is going on at Florida Tech. And
sure thing. Anytime. Thanks, Jim.
Times to come. So, and season's greetings to you and Marilyn
thank you.
And everybody.
Same to you. Thanks.
Good. Thanks. Just a couple of more thoughts here before we wrap up today's program, and I do want to say and take a moment to say that this is a great time of year filled with parties, beautiful decorations, traditional music, favorite movies and TV shows to watch, not only on the networks but in your own DVD player, something I never had as a kid, You had to sit down and watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer on that one special weeknight when it happened, even if it meant you had to skip church. But most importantly for my family, and I hope for yours, this is the season in which we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. And so from my family to yours, may God bless you with peace and love in this season and for always. And may you have a very Merry Christmas, too. Well, next week, Skylab astronaut Jerry Carr, commander, who spent Christmas of 1973 in Earth orbit, will be live with us on the phone from Houston on a Christmas weekend program, along with his now grown-up son, Jeff Carr, communications director for United Space Alliance, our sponsor. The father and son combination are going to reminisce with us about that time as we present sort of a family-themed edition of Space Talk next Saturday. It's one of these deals where, you know, there's been so many second-generation people that are in the space program, and Jerry Carr and Jeff Carr represent that, and we thought it would be fun to have sort of a family show on that day after Christmas. So as you are, I guess, either opening up your presents or perhaps playing with your presents, I guess if you have kids in the house, you will have had the presents open by about 8 in the morning. And if you're a father of a young kid, you'll still be putting stickers on your toys and batteries in the toys by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We invite you to tune into Space Talk and listen to us reminisce about what it's like to have Christmas in space way back when in 1973. And in the meantime, we want to invite all of you to continue to stay up to date with what's happening with Space Talk. We invite you to follow us on Twitter by programming in Space Talking. We certainly will take your questions and comments via AOL at any time, spacetalking@AOL.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. We look forward to hearing from you via the computer that way. So coming up in later of the weeks in January, we want to tell you that Fred Ordway, and I was pleased to just get this confirmed the other day, Fred Ordway, who is a longtime space historian, one of these guys who I followed when I was growing up with a kid, is going to be our guest on the January edition of Space Talk. And I just got that word and wanted to bring that along to you right away because it's a real special deal. So I guess that's it for now. And again, have a great Merry Christmas, a great holiday week. Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance. We'll see you next Saturday. I'm Jim Bankey, and you're listening to WMMB.